Welcome to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. This podcast is all about conversations about healing and rising from the ashes of your grief and trauma. In this podcast, we will be deconstructing and highlighting the different aspects of grief and loss. I'm your host, Dr. Christina Zampatella. Hi, welcome to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. I am your host, Dr. Christina Zampatella, and today's podcast is going to be a little bit different. I'm not going to be interviewing anybody in this particular podcast. We're going to talk about something called nature-based rituals because they can be utilized as a coping skill and a way of healing through grief and trauma. I thought it might be real nice to be able to get a little bit more in depth with it. This was actually the topic of my dissertation, was the use of nature-based rituals in helping bereaved adult surviving siblings. And so I'm going to talk a little bit and give you a little bit of information. I'll give you some personal information too, and give you some examples from my own life. For those of you who don't know, I lost my brother Damien when he was 22 years old on Christmas Day in 1999. And so here we are, about 23 years later, haven't quite hit 24. And of course, the loss is still with me, right? Because I've integrated my loss into my life narrative. But you know, still it hits me. And every time Christmas rolls around, and other important dates, like his birthday just passed, trying to find ways to deal with the intense emotions that come up. Well, hell, if this can be one of those ways, then that's what I'm going to do. And I've got some notes here in front of me because I want to make sure that I cover the things I want to cover. But let's go ahead and get started with being able to share this with you. I hope you find it helpful. And if you do find it helpful or you have any further questions, you can go ahead and put those questions in the comments down below if you're listening to this on YouTube. So some basics here, like basically what purpose do rituals serve? Well, if you look at rituals, rituals can fall into societal rituals or personal rituals, they serve both of those kinds of purposes. So some social rituals might be examples of like marking important dates to your community, like a quinceañeras or a bat mitzvah. It could be getting married, could be getting your driver's license. In our society, that for some reason that's become a ritual. Certainly becoming 21, again, we know why that's become a ritual. But these mark important dates, and what the point is here is that we're looking at how that ritual can impact the way that our identities shift, the way that we understand ourselves in our society is then impacted, right? So there's influence in that way. So when we have a death, we're faced with a lot of rituals. We've got in many traditions, you've got where you go in, you have the viewing, the family's there, you give your condolences to the family, there's often a eulogy, then there's maybe the burial, and then you've got the wake, which is what is attended afterwards, where people get together and they express more condolences, and as a community we eat. It's just one form, right? That's actually a very important ritual. It's everybody in the society coming together. We all know why we are there, and we are there in order to support one another. We are there in order to provide the support to the person that we've lost. Now, and a lot of times, this might be the last ritual that we actually engage with. In certain religious orientations, there's no other marker. And other religious orientations, such as in the Jewish tradition, at the one-year mark, we have the unveiling of the headstone or the marker. So that becomes a ritual, and it becomes part of the grieving process because we are saying, hey, this is an important day, and we recognize that we have to come together as a family or as a society and connect to the history of our society in order to feel like we are acknowledging something that has impacted our lives tremendously. There are other kinds of rituals. There's rituals that represent moving from childhood to adulthood. There are rituals that make sure that we understand who are the men in the society and the women in society, or the hierarchies within our societies. And these can be rituals such as Rain dances, that's just a random one, but that is one of them. Then you have personal functions of rituals. And personal functions of rituals are a little bit different. So we have the societal functions of rituals that are often tied up into our identities. But then these personal functions of rituals can be for healing. They can be of letting go of something that maybe we've been hanging on to that's not been holding us back. It really is trying to mark moving from one type of identity to another, or to be able to find a container to help us manage really intense emotions. It helps mark our own shifts from, again, maybe even, what does it mean to us to have, to get married? There's an example. Personal function of ritual. There's societal part of that wedding, but there's also personal reasons for that wedding. So I know when I am, getting married, I know that I'm going to go through these certain steps, and then at one point, I will go from being identified as being a single person to either a husband or a wife. And at that moment, all the people around me, or the people in my society, now will know exactly what I mean when I say I'm a wife. We know that that means that you are married. We also know what it means when you say you're an orphan, that both of your parents have died, right? We know what it means when you say that you're a widow or a widower. Do we have an identity, a word for the changes that happen as a bereaved parent? We do not. And most cultures do not have a word for that. But I digress. So, personal functions of rituals allow us to come to a place in which we can internalize the changes that have occurred, whether or not they are changes that feel empowering, changes that have us shift from one stage or phase of our lives to another, and one in which it helps us understand where we are in the world and who we are in the world. So I just wanted to make sure I set that stage before we start talking, because really what we're going to be talking about here are our rituals and how we can engage in the natural environment, and why being in a natural environment can be so helpful in our healing process. So how is our behavior linked to a natural environment? Well, one of the things is when you're out in nature, it challenges the accustomed way in which you are operating in the world. It changes the way that you feel on a daily basis and the way that you problem solve. I'm looking around here at my office right now. I'm looking at my computer that you can't see, but I'm looking at my computer and I think, oh, I've got a huge to-do list and all these things that I need to do in order to problem solve. So that might take me away from thinking about my loss, or that might be messed up because of my loss and I have no ability to kind of engage in that problem solving. But when you're in nature, you're really not engaging in a whole lot of problem solving. So it challenges that. It makes more space for you to be able to focus on the things that perhaps really need some of your attention. It's impartial too. There's nobody judging you out in nature. Look, you could be, for example, seeing your therapist, and you may feel like your therapist is very non-judgmental, and I hope that he or she or they is. But there's another person on the other side. You're gonna wonder what is being thought. It's just, that's a natural thing for humans to do. But when you go out into nature, you don't have to worry about that. Nature's impartial. It doesn't hold any negative feelings or positive feelings. That gives you a chance to have some general, genuine self-expression. You can let down your guard there. And it's a place for you to be able to be authentic. There is a relative predictability in nature. Don't get me wrong, you're going to get a rainstorm and stuff like that. But generally, if I look out, like I'm looking out today, and we have a little bit of a partially clouded day, I'm not seeing any rain clouds out there, I can generally say it's going to be partially cloudy for the day. That when we are in a situation in which things have been feeling unpredictable, like our grieving process, our feelings, our thoughts, how it's impacting us and our behaviors, when those things are feeling, even the loss itself might have been unpredictable. This being out in nature, when it's relatively predictable, gives you a sense of control. It can also provide you, if there is a sense of control, it can lead to more, a relaxed state, and then maybe even being a little bit more open to learning, and hopefully learning about yourself. That openness that we were just talking about, that can lead to genuine self-expression. And if you can genuinely express yourself, even if it's in a journal, let's just say you take a journal, or you just of what you're thinking, that's going to allow you to kind of organize how you're feeling about things, allow you to put away everyday distractions. So it gets to be about you, which might feel a little overwhelming at times. But to be honest with you, if you're in an environment that's soothing, and we're going to talk about that here in a second, you're in an environment that naturally is soothing on a chemical level, a biochemical level, meaning all what's going on in your brain, then even being in an environment that may be open to opening you up to thinking and feeling about what's going on in your life, whether or not it's a grief or a trauma, if doing it in a safe place is what's really important. Also, when you're out in nature, you may not be interacting with another person, and therefore the relationship between you and the other person is not part of the process. It's not part of the experience that you're having. And what that does is it gives you the ability to kind of think and focus on you, and that gives you more control and a more more clarity of your feelings as well. And then finally, it gives you opportunities to have what are called like peak experiences. Peak experiences are pretty cool, and I bet a lot of you guys can be able to relate to this. A peak experience is you are out in, it's usually when you're connected to that which is higher than yourself. I don't care if that's a rock, I don't care if that's a tree, I don't care if it's God, Allah, Buddha, whatever makes you feel connected to your higher power, whatever is greater than yourself. You're in an environment in which you are so overwhelmed by the beautiful energy that is what you are witnessing, what you are experiencing. Like I remember when I lived out in California, I had gone into this garden area, and I was sitting on this bench, and it was overlooking the ocean. And I remember I closed my eyes and was trying to be, you know, meditative and mindful because, yeah, that's what we do, right? We're supposed to. I figured I'd give it a try. So I'm sitting there, and as I'm sitting there, I had this experience. It's almost like I could not tell where my body stopped and my environment began. And I had this sense of like, I couldn't think my way through it. I just felt like I was part of everything. Like all of a sudden the boundaries, they faded away. And it was shocking to me, and I wasn't able to hang on to it for very long. But to this day, and mind you, I don't even know how long ago that was. That had to have been at least 15 years ago. To this day, I can pull that feeling up. That made me see myself different in the world. So being in nature provides opportunity for those peak experiences, which provided me a sense of like getting out of my grief. Because if I know that I'm part of something greater, maybe there's more meaning in my life. And that was a really important part of that peak experience. Now, what else does nature facilitate? It can give you a sense of restoration, like you're just feeling more relaxed. Your attention is a little bit more focused because you're not being drawn away from all the things that are around you. You might be thinking about more spiritual stuff, or thinking about, you know, who are you in the world, and being able to make meaning from the things that you have gone through that really don't feel like they make any sense. And there's a flow. If you allow yourself to experience, there's a flow. Everything in nature, when there's not man-made objects around, everything in nature is meant to be exactly the way that it is. It flows. Unless you got man-made stuff and we're going in there and screwing everything up. And then there's a sense of compatibility. Check this out. There are certain trees and certain kinds of soil that emit a chemical. And that chemical connects directly to the cell in your brain. The cells in your brain are called neurons. And on some of the neurons, there are on all neurons, there's what they call a receptor. And it's kind of like, here's the lock, that receptor, and the chemical is the key. And that makes certain things happen in your brain. We got all kinds of receptors and all kinds of chemicals, and that's what makes our brain work, long story short. But certain trees and certain soils emit a chemical that connect to one of those receptors on the brain, and nothing else connects to it. Only that chemical connects to it. Think about what that means. Think about that. So when you're out in nature, you are in the environment in which you've come from. So there's a sense of compatibility, and then you're in a more relaxed state. It's like comforting. I think that was pretty cool. There's two books. One's called The Biophilia Effect. The other one's called Nature Fix. There's a lot of books, but those two I really, really like. And they talk a lot about a lot of stuff that I'm telling you about right now. So another thing, we kind of touched on it a bit, about being able to leave behind your daily tasks and give you a sense of like getting away and engaging in something different. And that sense of getting away, you know, when, I don't know about you, but when I'm going through something that's overwhelming, but then I also have an overwhelming amount of tasks that I have to do, it's too much. I'm feeling completely overwhelmed. I'm feeling bogged down, like I can't take care of myself. And if I'm not taking care of myself, I'm certainly not giving myself the opportunity to grieve in healthy ways. So having that sense of restoration is really important. What we also know in nature is that there's stuff that are called soft objects. And then in man-made, we have man-made hard objects. I'll describe what I mean by this. Soft objects are those that hold your attention in a gentle and effortless manner, which allow you to, it gives you an ability to ponder other things that are going on in your life. But again, you're connected to that natural place for you to be. Hard objects are like man-made objects, like my table and the stuff behind me and, you know, all the things, the camera in front of me. These are hard objects. Hard objects pull our attention away and sometimes can be grating. Sometimes when I'm out in nature and I hear like a helicopter, an airplane, or a motorcycle go by, and I mean, it becomes jarring and takes me away from the calmness that I'm feeling in my environment. The cycles that you see in nature of life and death, of the seasons, that help remind us that our experiences are natural. Life and death are natural, even when they are outside of what we would consider the normal trajectory. So for example, if a child were to pass before a parent, these kinds of things happen in nature as well. And they can be heart-wrenching, and they can feel catastrophic, and those kinds of losses feel very unfair. But if we're out in the natural environment, we are reminded that there are natural cycles, and sometimes we don't have control over those, although we're in an environment that reminds us that, guess what, this is part of what it means to be human, because you are part of the natural environment. So that's kind of what about, I had to set the stage there for you, so you understand really why doing rituals out in nature can be so powerful. That's part of it, okay? Now I want to talk about how there are rites of passage and what rituals, what we can do in nature and in order to have a healthy one that will help us with our grieving process. So I want you to think about a rite of passage. Let's just use getting married, all right? And let's just look at this in three phases. You've got the first one when you're separated, where you're separated out from who you are, the identity that you had. So again, going from a single person to wife, that would be an example of a separation part of the ritual. And then you're in limbo. And then you're in reintegration. Okay, in English, let me put it instead of psychologist ease, I'll put it in this example. So when I got married to my husband, I was standing at the top of the aisle with my dad. and I'm standing at the top of the aisle, and everybody, my whole community's out in front of me. And once I stepped into the, and so everybody sees me as single, like I said, once I stepped into the aisle, I no longer was that single woman, but I wasn't married yet either. So I had the part of separation. Going down the aisle was limbo. I'm trying to get down the aisle as quickly as possible because there's too many people looking at me and I didn't like that. And then I go up and the guy that officiated our wedding goes, "Jeff, do you take Christina to be your lawfully wedded wife?" And I made sure that we didn't have obey in any of the in any of the vows, which he keeps trying to bring up, and I keep saying I didn't write mine, and you didn't put that in your vows, but whatever. And he goes, "Of course. Why would I not marry this woman? She's amazing, and there's all these people here, and she's the greatest thing since sliced bread." And then I go, "Christina, do you take Jeff to be your lawfully wedded husband?" And I was like, "Well, he's kind of cute. I'm wearing this pretty dress. There's a lot of people out there. It'd be weird if I said no. I'll say yes." And the guy goes, "Okay, you may kiss the bride. Kissy, kissy. Turn me around. I now pronounce you man and wife to everybody." Now I have now moved into a whole different identity. That was my whole rite of passage. Separation, then that limbo stage, and then reintegration. Here is a different meaning. My identity has shifted. Sometimes we are slammed into an identity shift when we've lost somebody. Sometimes we are slammed into a shifting an identity if something traumatic happens to us. We are no longer the person we used to be. I'm sure you've said that to yourself. I'm never going to be the person that I used to be. And guess what? You are 100% right. You are not going to be the person that you were. That who you were does not exist because this has now happened. You were forced into separation. And you're not going to be who you are once you develop this new normal, whatever that might be, and hopefully in a healthier way. So you're in that limbo state, and that limbo state is hard. That limbo state comes with a lot of trying to come to a reckoning with how your life has changed and how you have changed and how things don't make sense anymore. And how are you supposed to find meaning in your life when things have changed so much, right? So that would be an example of a rite of passage. A ritual can help identify and work through rites of, and going through rites of passage. It becomes part of it. So when I say rituals, what do I mean? What do I mean by like a ritual is going to be therapeutic? Well, we have emotional reactions to things that are symbols in our lives. And in English, what I mean by that is, maybe there's something that reminds you of the person that you've lost. So maybe you have some jewelry. Maybe you have some furniture. I'm going to tell you a story about why brownies are an important symbol for me. When we were, I know it sounds weird, other than the fact that they're very yummy and good. When we were younger, we didn't have a whole lot of money. And sometimes my mom would bring home brownie batter, you know, the boxed brownie batter. And she would let me make it. And here I am, putting the eggs in there and putting the oil in there. And Damien would come over and stick his fat ass finger in the brownie batter. And we'd get in a stupid fight and, you know, running around. He was hard to live with. He had bipolar disorder. He had ADHD. It was very difficult to live with him. And he kept sticking his finger in the damn brownie batter. I had issues. I have trauma around my brownie batter. After he died, I had a series of a few dreams, and there was this one dream that really hit me hard. I was standing in front of my stove in the house that I was living in at the time, and I was making brownies, and he was on my right-hand side. And here I am stirring the brownies, and he comes over and sticks his fat-ass finger in my brownie batter again, and I wasn't real happy about that. So, boom, there he goes, and I got mad as quickly as fast as you can blink an eye. But as soon as that happened, I started laughing and I kind of pushed him with my arm. And I can feel that. I pushed him with my arm and we started laughing. And in that moment, in that dream, I can tell you the colors. I can tell you the color of my stove. I can tell you everything. In that moment, I had this beautiful experience with my brother that helped repair part of our relationship, this stupid fighting that we had, in a way that we never had the opportunity to have because he died. When you see brownies, you probably are just seeing something that's yummy, which should, you know, be your breakfast, and you're right, it should be. But when I see brownies, and it can be anywhere, it can be in the grocery store, I can be at the Wawa. From those of you here in the Mid-Atlantic area, you know what the hell I'm talking about with Wawa. If you're not from the area, just pretend I said 7-Eleven. You probably say something really yummy, but I can see it in those places. I think of Damien every single time. That symbol, that's a symbol. That represents so much different, so many different things of our relationships, our history, are the problems in our relationship, the love that we had in our relationship. It represented so many emotions that were connected. And when I look at that symbol, I feel emotional. And it allows me to tap into my emotions. And if I'm having a hard time tapping into my emotions, sometimes being with our symbols allow us to feel things when we're feeling kind of numb. And it's, feeling numb is normal in grief. It really is. Feeling indefinitely numb, we're not looking for that. That's a little bit of an issue. We don't want you to completely feel numb all the time. So that symbol that I will bring into the ritual, and I'm going to explain to you at the end of today, I'm going to explain to you the steps on how to create a nature-based ritual. That symbol is something that I'm going to make sure to incorporate into my ritual. What I do with the ritual, or what I do maybe with the different symbols that I have in the ritual, also represent like changes that have happened in my life. So, for example, I'm going to tell you all about a ritual that I do around on Christmas Day, and mine are complicated because God forbid I make anything simple. But the actions that I engage with, so for example, at the end of my ritual, I will take a shower, and I'm taking the shower because it's representing like a fresh start of the day, of being almost like a baptism of sort. And that is kind of analogous to the changes that I have in my own life. I go from, you know, these difficult emotions to trying to find a way to take care of myself, a way to wash away some of the difficulty that I have in my life, and then be able to engage in the rest of the world. Well, that's kind of analogous to that. It provides different actions. And it also creates new experiences. I think this will make a little bit more sense when I tell you about my ritual itself. And I have a stronger sense of direction. You know, on Christmas, I mean, who the hell wants to do a freaking ritual for their brother who died on Christmas? Who wants to do that? Nobody wants to do that. But if I don't do it, Christmas, it sucks. So if I'm able to create the ritual in the morning, it helps me contain how I feel. It helps me go, I'm going to focus on my relationship with my brother and mark the fact that this was a time that, you know, he died, and I'm paying attention to him. Well, what that does is it gives me a greater sense of direction. I can place this here, and therefore I can now direct my attention to giving three teenage boys gifts than them thinking that they're completely entitled to those gifts. When I am engaging in ritual, my body and my mind are working together. And what we do know, like even in therapy, if I'm doing therapy with you, if I'm talking with you, that's what we call top-down processing. We're talking about whatever's going on. So we're kind of going up here in your head, and we're kind of making our way down. We're trying to understand things from a deeper place into a deeper place. When I'm doing stuff that's through my body, which is called somaticizing, somatic work, when I'm doing body stuff, this kind of bypasses your brain. This goes through a different part of the way that your brain works. And if I'm doing both, I can really integrate very well. And that's why when you're doing therapy with a therapist who can do both of those, your therapy and your changes can make differences in the way that you're processing what you're going through. Well, ritual makes you do that. I'm engaging in something. I can't really put words to it all the time because what I'm doing is I'm engaging with it, but then maybe I'm thinking about what I'm doing. So there's a combination or a connection between one's mind and body.
Thank you for listening to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it, subscribe, and leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. We want to be a resource for anyone who is experiencing loss, and this is a simple way you can help us spread the word. Check out our show description. There you'll find a link to connect with me on social media, as well as helpful articles and resources.